This is Jeff Martin, host of Museum Confidential, here with a special report. Many of us in the museum world have been wondering if and when the Me Too movement would affect our industry in a major newsmaking way. This just might be that moment. A recent New York Times article by reporters Robin Pogrebin and Zachary Small carries the headline, quote, "He left a museum after women complained. His next job was bigger," end quote. We recently spoke with Robin and Zach by phone. I guess I just want to dive into the story. So on January 10th, this story posted about Joshua Helmer. And of course, a lot has happened in the last few days since then. But maybe, Robin, you could start us off by kind of telling us who Joshua Helmer is and what the general gist of the story is.
Yeah, so we published an article about Joshua Helmer, who is a former manager in the education department at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. He had a rapid rise there, being something of a wunderkind. Just 4 months after arriving, he was promoted to that position. And he was forced out of the Philadelphia Museum of Art, although the circumstances of his departure were not publicized. And he landed at the Erie Art Museum as the director in 2018. And our reporting revealed multiple allegations of sexual harassment or misconduct against him. And after revealing all of that on Friday, he was ultimately forced to resign from that position on Monday.
Yeah. So, Zach, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you and Robin worked together on the story, how it came to your attention in the first place, because I know this was a multi-month investigation, of course, without revealing any sources. But how did this land on your desk originally?
So it landed on my desk about 4 months ago. It was after I had done a big report looking at labor rights and safety standards in the art world. And I actually received an anonymous tip telling me to look into the Philadelphia Museum of Art. And so that's where it really started. And later, I was lucky enough to get pulled onto this with Robin, and we worked on it together to shore up the reporting and to finish up our investigation.
So when you were first tipped off about the Philadelphia Museum of Art, were you specifically told you need to look into the culture of what's happening there, or was it directly about Mr. Helmer specifically and some of the incidents that you talk about in the piece?
It was both.
It was both. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, maybe Robin, you could speak to this, about what some of the specific allegations were in the Philadelphia Museum part of the story before we move into the Erie Art Museum, where he eventually was forced out just yesterday, I believe. Talk about some of the things that happened at the Philadelphia Museum of Art.
So as we reported in our initial story, we spoke to at least 9 women, and we imagine there are probably more, who had experienced some kind of mistreatment by Mr. Helmer. And we also spoke to managers who were aware of this behavior or had been made aware of it and tried to alert their superiors to it. I think what seems to be clear is that how you define the misconduct is somewhat in question in terms of how the Philadelphia Museum handled it. Clearly, they found that his behavior was inappropriate enough to part ways with him. Whether or not it amounted to conduct of a sexual nature is, I think, in question. But nevertheless, there was kind of a critical mass of experience, and one story echoed another in terms of his building up these women and then kind of breaking them down, constantly berating them, often in view of colleagues because he had a glass office. A lot of this was fuzzy in the sense that some of these relationships were consensual initially, and some of them lasted even beyond the women leaving the museum because of him and because of that treatment. So there was a real component of sort of emotional abuse that they described, and it made it difficult for them to extricate themselves from those relationships. But in all of the cases, some of them were his direct reports, which is an express violation of the museum's policies about dating. But in other cases, they were just they were women on his staff who were subordinate in rank, although not necessarily a direct report. But he clearly represented himself to them as someone who had a lot of authority, and they did not have reason to doubt that. He suggested that he was very close to the director of the museum, Timothy Rubb, that he had his ear and that he was even in line to succeed him as director. And whether or not that was an inflated kind of portrayal of his role, that was how people perceived him on staff. And so he ended up having quite a lot of power and abused it, apparently, according to these allegations.
Yeah, and just to make clear, and toward the end of your piece that ran on the 10th, you quote, I believe, a senior curator who says that, you know, Mr. Helmer was no longer allowed to even be on the premises or in the building of the Philadelphia Museum. And of course, you know, you don't exactly know why, because you mentioned some of those things still aren't known as to why he was ultimately parted ways with the museum. But obviously, there's something there. Can you talk a little bit about the so on the headline for the piece that originally ran, you very much make clear that it wasn't just what happened at the Philadelphia Museum. It was that this incident or these many incidents happened. And then, of course, he ended up getting an even better job as a director and maybe the youngest, or if not one of the youngest directors, museum directors in the country at just age 30 or 31 when I believe he's 31 now, maybe was 30 when he took the position there.
He was 29.
29. Yeah. Okay. And so one of you, maybe Zach, could talk about, is the crux of the story, would it be what it is if there wasn't that component? If it had just been, you know, he had his tenure at the Philadelphia Museum, was forced out or whatever had happened there. It's this component of he was in some ways rewarded with an even better job that really kind of brings these two things together. And what do we know about what the Erie Art Museum knew, if anything, when he was hired?
To answer the first part of your question, it would certainly still be a story if there was a manager at a museum with these sort of allegations and so many of these allegations against him, even after leaving under whatever circumstances there were. But yeah, I think that the story becomes much bigger when you see this in the art world. You know, a sense of the culture of silence that we have in small businesses and corporate offices as well as the art world, where these sort of activities are not necessarily known or spoken about. So I think his arrival to Erie certainly raises a lot of questions about what companies are allowed to say and under what circumstances they're allowed to sort of provide a warning if necessary, or just to inform about the reasons behind someone's departure.
Yeah, because what
and I think that it was very important to us, as you're alluding to it, is that this does have a larger, there's a larger story to tell here beyond one bad actor. And certainly one bad actor is significant, and the women whose lives he allegedly damaged, that matters to us. But it also does as kind of a template for what can happen at a museum, at any nonprofit, as well as at the corporation, in terms of this behavior being able to be perpetuated, because there is this kind of legally baked in protections where one institution doesn't necessarily have to inform the next about the actual circumstances of a employee's departure. And in fact, there's a disincentive to do so because of concerns about defamation. So we don't know whether or not there was a non-disclosure agreement here and what the terms were of their separation. But it does seem that it kind of guarantees that there is, as Zach alluded to, a culture of silence around this, because it's not discussed openly.
And that's specifically dealing with the departure from Philadelphia Museum. But just to kind of drill down a little bit more on it, what do we know, if anything, about what was disclosed to the board of directors or any of the hiring body at the Erie Art Museum when he went to that institution?
What we do know is that there was a headhunter who was running this, you know, executive search for the Erie Art Museum after its former director, John Vanko, retired. What we don't know necessarily is the specifics of the due diligence that that headhunter actually performed.
You gave Mr. Helmer several opportunities to comment or respond to the investigation, I would imagine, over quite a bit of time that you were working on the story, probably even up to yesterday, right, when you had the new piece come out. Are you expecting to hear from him in any real capacity? I'm sure you view this story as ongoing as it's kind of just more and more stuff is coming into light. Have you had any contact with any representation or attorneys on his behalf?
We haven't, no. And I mean, I think initially even getting him on the phone was somewhat serendipitous, because I think he sort of impulsively answered my email after I came onto the story. Zach had already been trying him. And I think after that, once he started to realize the seriousness of the allegations, the scope of what we were doing, he kind of went away and kind of went underground and hasn't responded since. So, and I think given the outcome, I'm not sure what more he might have to say. And while we do expect that there are probably others who have had similar experiences, I think now that he's gone from Erie, to some extent that does close the story, that closes this chapter in any case.
Both of you have written extensively about museum culture generally, and Robin, of course, you've written a lot about sexual harassment and some of the things happening in the quote-unquote Me Too era. Do you think that this is the last we're going to hear about this in the museum world? Is this going to be the tipping point for a lot of other stories? Because we've been wondering in the museum community when this would kind of land on, you know, this industry, because it really hasn't in any real major public way yet, and you know, we're a few years into a lot of the news that's been happening here. Have there been grumblings that you've heard about, or things that you may have kind of looked down certain paths and had the kind of full information that you did on this story, or is this an anomaly in some ways? How do you view this kind of in the industry writ large?
I think if you look at social media right now, you'll already see the wheels turning. There's a hashtag going around called MuseumMeToo, and it has hundreds of posts of people talking about very similar circumstances in their own lives at different museums with different managers. So this is certainly something, you know, the topic of Me Too in the art world is not going to go away. I think what you see in our report is a groundswell of people who, you know, were upset and had been upset for years about what happened, and with little discussion within their institution about what happened. And ultimately, that's what sort of bubbles these things up to us and to our desk, is a group of people who say that they won't take it anymore and that they want their story to be told.
I would say, add to that, though, Jeff, that, you know, the bar is certainly higher for us now at the Times because of the proliferation of these stories, quite frankly. There's something great about this moment of reckoning and how many of these stories we've done, but there's also a little bit of a numbing effect that we want to avoid, in terms of people sort of losing their sense of outrage. And there is this kind of, it's not a Harvey Weinstein story bar that, you know, for better or worse, is a little bit of the standard. So how prominent someone is, how egregious the behavior, we have to take all of these things into account because we can't do every one.
That's a great point. And I'm just curious to know, when you're going down this path and you're dealing with someone like Mr. Helmer, for example, who is not a, you know, he certainly had some moments where he's kind of viewed as, like you mentioned, you said the word wunderkind, was kind of viewed as this bright light and potentially the future of museums. And, you know, many people could maybe see him at some point running one of the large institutions across the country. He certainly wasn't a household name, and he's not a, you know, Glenn Lowry level museum director or someone like that. So, you know, when you're taking on a story like this, that, you know, that person's, and obviously that bore out yesterday with him being forced to leave the Erie Art Museum, that, you know, that person's life will change from one day to the next, one Friday, mm-hmm. when that story mm-hmm. comes out. And of course, there's a responsibility there. You know, how does that kind of impact your process in the, you know, fact-checking and the kind of finding as many sources? It seems like you had a lot of sources on this, and a lot of people came out and were named. These were not anonymous sources. There are people named in the pieces. There are text messages that were relayed. But just kind of, you know, the burden of that when you're reporting, if I'd be interested to hear a little bit about that.
That's a great question, and that's exactly what we grappled with. And it's why the piece took so long to get, you know, finished and get right, because we wanted it to be bulletproof. You do have a responsibility when you are kind of coming down hard on someone in a way that is going to affect their lives. And we just needed to make sure that we had kind of quadruple checked everything. And also having people on the record makes a really big difference. I mean, ironically, with this piece, we had even more people on the record that we couldn't fit in the piece. And part of the reason that we had to limit the length is because, as you put it, this is not a Glenn Lowry. We have to weigh these things in terms of how much attention we give to it and how much weight. But we did feel like it was a story worth telling, not only to kind of validate the experience of these women, but because it does have larger lessons for the field, and that we do feel like this is a cautionary tale that is not unique to Joshua Helmer or to the museums involved.
I'll just say, for clarification for anyone listening, Glenn Lowry is the longtime director of the Museum of Modern Art, just so in case everyone doesn't know that. Zach, I'd like to know a little bit about the process of team investigations. You know, you and Robin worked together on mm-hmm. this project. How does that actually work in terms of the how the sausage gets made component of, you know, what are you doing? What is Robin doing? How do you compare notes? You know, who's taking on which task? Because you have other, you know, you're working on other stories at the same time. How does that all play out from the behind the scenes?
Well, I don't know if I like the metaphor of a newspaper as a sausage, but working together, you know, Robin and I have worked previously and we work well together. So it was pretty seamless. Coming onto the story first and getting that tip, my first goal for the story was really, you know, reaching out to women and to people that want to speak, you know, very gradually. I wasn't trying to force someone to tell this story. And I think when you're looking at Me Too stories, with any article, it's important to get everyone involved, you know, their side of the story, give them an opportunity to comment. But it certainly wasn't my goal to force someone to reveal what for many of them was, you know, one of the most traumatic experiences of their lives. So once we had that in place, what Robin and I really tried to do was make sure that we delegated those tasks of following up with those women, of following up with the people that were mentioned in the article. And just making sure that we didn't overlap too much.
Robin, maybe you could talk about this. When you're going through this process and you're thinking about the industry and the museum world in a larger sense, it's very obvious when you start thinking about these things, about the imbalance, the gender imbalance that still exists in museums. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would imagine that if you looked at the workforce of museums across the country, it would probably be at least predominantly female in terms of general workforce, but the administration of museums is still very much male-centric. How does that play into, you know, where we are now and hopefully how things like this will start to inform some of those things down the road?
It's such a good question, Jeff, because that was an element in our story that we unfortunately weren't able to include as much as I might want to have done so, which was just several of the women we spoke to talked about how this was somewhat informed by a much larger culture of patriarchy at these institutions, that the low-level employees are predominantly women, as you said, and that there is actually this sense of you should be grateful to have this position in the first place, no matter how many hours you work or how underpaid you are. There's somebody, you know, waiting right behind you to take it if you sort of decide that it's too much. And so there is that, it just gets perpetuated because these leadership positions continue to be dominated by men. And so I think it's important to think about this as a referendum on the industry to some extent, and how important it is to have more balance in terms of gender. And then there might be greater sensitivity to these issues from the outset.
Thank you for your reporting on this important issue. And thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Jeff Martin, host of Museum Confidential, and this has been a special report.
I'm Scott Gregory, and I produce the program. And you can learn more about this radio station at publicradiotulsa.org and more about Philbrook Museum at philbrook.org.
And if you'd like to know more about this specific story, we encourage you to read both articles at the New York Times.